कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी जय गोपी चन वाला गिरिवर दारी जय गोपी चन वाला गिरिवर दारी यशोरनंदन भज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन भज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा वनचारी वनचारी जय राध माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राध माधव कुंज बिहारी भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali, Text 1. Sutta Uvacha. Tata Parikshit Vijavaya Shikshaya. Mahim Mahabhagavata Shashashaha Yatahi Sutyam Abhijata Kovida Samadhi Sambhipra Mahagunastata Sutta Uvacha तथा परीक्षित विजवाय शिक्षया महिम महाभागवत शाश्वशः यथा हि सुत्यम् अभिजात कोविदा समादिशं विप्र महद्गुणस्तथा Sutta Uvacha Tata Parikshit Vijavarya Shikshaya Mahim Maha Bhagavata Sashashaha Yata hi sutyam abhijata kovida Samadhi shambhipra mahadgunastata Sutta Uvacha. Sutta Goswami said, Tata, thereafter, Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit, Vijavarya, the great twice born Brahmanas, Shikshaya, by their instructions, Mahim, the earth. Mahabhagavata, the great devotee, Shashasa, ruled, Ha, in the past, Yata, as they told it, he, certainly, Sutyam, at the time of his birth, Abhijata Kovida, expert astrologers at the time of birth. Samadhisham gave their opinions. Vipra, O Brahmanas, Mahatgunaha, great qualities. Tata, true to that. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sutta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas, Maharaj Parikshit then began to rule over the world as a great devotee of the Lord under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. Purports. At the time of Maharaj Parikshit's birth, the expert astrologer Brahmanas foretold some of his qualities. Maharaj Parikshit developed all those qualities being a great devotee of the Lord. The real qualification is to become a devotee of the Lord, and gradually all the good qualities worthy of possession develop. Maharaj Parikshit was a Mahabhagavata, or a first-class devotee, who is not only well-versed in the science of devotion, but also able to convert others to become devotees by his transcendental instructions. Maharaj Parikshit was therefore a devotee of the first order, and thus he used to consult great sages and learned brahmanas who could give advice, who could advise him by the shastras how to execute the state administration. Such great kings were more responsible than modern elected executive heads, because they obliged the great authorities by following their instructions left in Vedic literatures. There was no need for impractical fools to enact daily a new legislative bill and to conveniently alter it again and again to serve some purpose. The rules and regulations were already set forth by great sages like Manu, Yajnavalkya, Parashara, and other liberated sages, and the enactments were all suitable for all ages and all places. Therefore, the rules and regulations were standard and without flaw or defect. Kings like Maharaj Parikshit have their council of advisors, and all the members of that council were either great sages or brahmanas of the first order. They did not accept any salary, nor had they any necessities for such salaries. The state would get the best advice without expenditure. They were themselves samadarshi, equal to everyone, both man and animal. They would not advise the king to give protection to man and instruct him to kill the poor animals. Such council members were not fools or representatives to compose a fool's paradise. They were all self-realized souls, and they knew perfectly well how all living beings in the state would be happy, both in this life and in the next. They were not concerned with the hedonistic philosophy of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. They were philosophers in the real sense, and they knew well what is the mission of human life. Under all these obligations, the advisory council of the king would give correct directions, and the king or executive head, being himself a qualified devotee of the Lord, would scrutinizingly follow them for the welfare of the state. The state in the days of Maharaj Parikshit, the state in the days of Maharaj Yudhisthira or Maharaj Parikshit was a welfare state in the real sense of the term, because no one was unhappy in that state, be he man or animal. Maharaj Parikshit was an ideal king for a welfare state of the world. Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svaputantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turu Vrishcha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees that we can say something for the pleasure of Shri Shri Radhe Shyam. May the devotees be benefited and may our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. Hare Krishna. So again, we'll read this verse. This is chapter 16, which is entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali, text 1. Sutta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas, Maharaj Parikshit then began to rule over the world as a great devotee of the Lord, under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. Krishna Sva Damopagate Dharma Jnana Dibi Saha. As soon as Krishna when the Krishna sun sets, Dharma Jnana Divisaha, then also the light of Dharma goes out. And the light of knowledge goes out from this world. And therefore, this age is like the age of darkness, the age of Kali. So this chapter is beginning. How Parikshit received this age of Kali. So when Krishna leaves, immediately there is a shift in the age. And actually, previous chapter, Yudhisthira Maharaj, he began to notice symptoms of the age of Kali that were coming. It's like when it's going to rain. First there are some dark clouds, and we can understand by that. The rain is coming soon, especially around here. It's always raining. Well, suddenly it's raining. So, in the same way, Yudhisthira Maharaj, he could see different signs. He felt something was wrong with himself. He also began to see conflict in the kingdom between people. And also even material nature, he noticed there were some changes and there were irregularities in the seasons. So he knew that something was wrong. He suspected Krishna had gone away. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, what did he do? First thing, he also wanted to go away, because if Krishna's leaving, with his attachment to Krishna, he also prepared his own departure. And the first thing he did was he enthroned Parikshit Maharaj. And it's said in those verses, Parikshit, his quality is mentioned, Sumam, which means that he was identical in all respects with Yudhisthira himself. This is how Parikshit is glorified. In all respects, he was just like Yudhisthira Maharaj. So it was known from the beginning he would be a great king, Parikshit. And so Yudhisthira Maharaj, he prepared himself for going back home, back to Godhead. And he performed, actually it's described these verses where he merges, some people call this in the Tantric tradition, this is something called Laya Yoga. Laya, which means to absorb one principle in the other. A kind of meditation where you know, it's described that even Yudhisthira, he merged the senses into the mind, then he merged the mind into the three modes of nature, and then he merged the three modes of nature into the Mahatattva. But what's the idea of that is that you're removing everything artificial from yourself, returning it back to the elemental sources, and then what's left after all that is just the pure soul. So it's removing everything that's external from the soul. And it's actually a process, step by step, where all the different elements in the body are returned back to their elemental sources. Like it says in the Bible also, from dust to dust. This body is made of dust, of earth, and it returns to the earth at the time of death. And similarly, all the different elements of the body that are material, both gross and subtle, can return to their sources by a process. And then what's there? What remains? The pure soul. So now we come, after Yudhisthira Maharaj leaves, then Parikshit Maharaj, this is the beginning of the reign of Parikshit Maharaj. The Bhagavatam has rasa, Bhagavatam rasam alayam. It's full of rasa, but also there are sections that give instructions to society and for governmental, managerial, leadership, government. There's also some indication of how that's to be done. And why is that so? Why does the Bhagavatam give those instructions and teachings? It's so that all people can come under the order or the law of God. All citizens, all people. This is unique about Vedic culture, because if we look at Christianity, Buddhism, there wasn't teachings to the kings, spiritual instructions to how to rule. That later came of its own accord, where, you know, once governments get control of a particular religion also, then they may rule in a certain way or push it in a certain way. But in the Vedic culture, you find that all those instructions and information are actually given for the administrative class, the Kshatriyas. And the whole system is there. So this is very unique in the Vedic culture. Buddha rejected that and just said basically he had his disciples. Jesus also, he gave very little emphasis on that. He had his disciples and they followed the Nivritti mark, the path of actually just giving everything up. But Vedic culture is very complete, so that's also there. Nivritti mark is emphasized. You know, we want to give up our attachments to the material world and strictly follow the example of Guru. At the same time, if there are attachments, there's a way to regulate those attachments. And the king has to be aware of all these things because most people will be attached to the material world, and so there's a certain process for them to gradually be uplifted as well. So Vedic culture is very complete in that it gives everything, something for everyone. So even in the Bhagavatam, we're finding out how to actually rule this world, a true king. When the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam, when they're described, the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam, there's a logic to those subjects. There's a kind of order. So the first one is Sarga. It's the creation coming from Mahavishnu. And then comes Visarga, which is the secondary creation, which is the creation of Lord Brahma, being empowered by Vishnu. He also creates and arranges things. And then what's the next subject matter? It's called Stanam. The Prabhupada says, actually another verse says, Stittir Vaikuntha Vijaya. What does that mean? So the whole creation comes out from Mahavishnu. Then Brahma creates. Now that everything's in place, what is there to do? What is there to know? Stittir Vaikuntha Vijaya. Then one has to acknowledge the supremacy of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Now that everything is in place, this is what is necessary. That everybody acknowledges the victory and the supremacy of the Supreme Lord Himself. Because everything has come from the Lord. This is a miraculous creation. So what's the natural response when the whole creation is finally set up? That victory, supremacy, the Supreme Lord, He is supreme. That should be the mindset. That should be the consciousness. So the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam, first creation, secondary creation, then Stanam, the true situation to be realized is that the Lord of Vaikuntha is supreme. So the king is meant to also raise that flag of the Supreme Lord. The king is meant, on this earth, is meant to represent that reality, that God is supreme. And therefore the instructions that are given, if the citizens simply follow and have faith, and have appreciation for the king and follow, they're actually aligned with the order of the Lord. This is an important principle because it's not just king and kingdoms, but it's also mother, father, children. Right? This is also another, like a microcosm of the king and the kingdom. It's also that same principle, or a temple. Right? It's also a king and a kingdom. Right? So that the principle can be applied many places, but the idea is that person who is above, in a sense, should be aligned with the order of the Lord, and then those who are under that person will also be benefited. But that person has to rule in the right way. With power, but also with affection, with clarity. So many qualifications are there. So the king, so these are great kings we're hearing about who actually personify all of these. You know, it's described here, King Parikshit, Mahabhagavat. Prabhupada says in one place, only a Mahabhagavat could actually rule the whole world properly. You have to be a Mahabhagavat to be able to do that. You cannot be disconnected from God and actually rule properly. And to such an extent, you know, imagine a ruler of the whole earth. You can't imagine it. But Prabhupada says in one place also that what is the problem with understanding that? One king can rule over the whole earth. In fact, one person rules over the whole universe. Lord Brahma. One person. So, it's mentioned here in this verse. We can look at some of these some of the Sanskrit in this verse to see about King Parikshit. It says, Sutyam. Sutyam abhijata kovida. That it was told from his very birth. We know from the 12th chapter of the Bhagavatam. The astrologers came for the birth of Parikshit and they began to talk about, they gave their opinions, Prabhupada says, of his future qualities. It was all known. It said that he will maintain perfectly, just like King Ishvaku. And that his promise would be so strong and perfect, just like Lord Ram. He will be as charitable as Maharaj Sibi. And he will be as magnanimous as King Ranti Dev. So these are all mentioned in the Bhagavatam, these personalities. And it's amazing that from Parikshit's birth, you know, all these great kings, all their most special qualities, like we know King Sibi of being charitable, and Ranti Dev being magnanimous. All their greatest qualities, they will all be within this boy, Parikshit. And also he will be a firm punisher of those who oppose Dharma. And that's also important. You know, in our world today, when we think of compassion, we only think of one half of compassion usually. We think of a very soft, gentle, kind, sweet person, so compassionate. That's what comes to mind when we think of compassion. But that's one half of compassion. Compassion, real compassion, also requires great strength and power. This is a glorification of Parikshit. He will become a firm punisher of anyone who opposes Dharma. In fact, when Sutta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya, Parikshit, he goes out, we'll hear soon, that he goes out and he sees Kali personified, beating a bull and harming a cow. And it's described that he punished Kali for that. The amazing thing is when the sages heard that Parikshit punished, they stopped Sutta Goswami and they said, what do you mean? He only punished them? He only punished him? Why did he not kill them? Kill him. How could he not kill him? If he saw somebody harming the bull and cow, how is it that Parikshit didn't immediately kill that person? That's what they wondered. It shows that what kind of sages, they weren't sentimental sages. They thought it was strange that he only punished and didn't kill. Of course, there's a significant reason why he only punished and didn't kill. Because Kali has to come. This is the age of Kali. And so Parikshit had to kind of make an allowance for the changing of the age. So Kali personified, he has to live. This is his age. He's the Yuga Purusha. He's the personality of the age. But he allowed him to live, but he only allowed him to live in certain places in this world. He could also have his kingdom. Where is his kingdom? Where there is illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, and money. Wherever those things are there, Kali rules. And so we have to be very careful because we have to also know how to utilize certain things, utilize money and so forth, and certain things we should avoid, certain things have to be used in Krishna's service, but we should know when you enter that realm, Kali is supreme, so we have to be very careful. So anyway, this idea of compassion. Compassion. We emphasize now the very softer side of compassion. But compassion also requires great power and strength like these kings. Right, a certain firmness to correct, to punish, to remove. You know, I was hearing, just reading recently in the ninth canto, Lord Ramchandra. But here's the key, you have all those powerful qualities, but you do it all without hate, without resentment. So you correct, but without resentment. You punish also even, but without anger, without resentment, without hate in your heart. That's the key. Otherwise it goes off into another form and creates great harm. But these kings were able to do that. They could be very soft, very affectionate. Parikshit is glorified for his soft heart. It's described later that he becomes overwhelmed with the devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. So that devotion is in his heart. But at the same time, he was... Actually, when he saw Kali harming the bull, he became excited that he could correct him. He became excited that he could battle him if needed. And that's the Kshatriya spirit. So the compassion, you know, to do it, to be strong, strong compassion with power, but without any resentment in the heart. And another nice example I was just reading in the ninth canto, Lord Ramchandra. So Ravana, right, was going crazy. So Lord Ramchandra killed him. That's it. He dealt with it immediately. He removed Ravana from harming himself and others, and he killed him. But it's described, as soon as he passed, as soon as he died, he told Vibhishan, now you should perform the funeral rites for his benefit. So there was no resentment, there was no actual hatred of Ravana. In fact, Ram, we know he says at some point, right, if Ravana was to come to me right now, even after everything, even after stealing Sita, if he was to come right now and fall at my feet, I would give him full shelter. If he would come and surrender, I will completely protect him and take care of him. So that's the heart of the Lord, is that he does what's necessary. And this is the heart of the devotee. They do what's necessary in this world, firmly, strongly, but with no resentment, with no anger, with no hatred. No false ego anger. You can be angry for the Lord, but that's a different quality of anger. It's a kind of force that's there because of doing what's right. And there's also an anger that is coming from our false ego, and that will only create harm. When we act even for what's right in this world with hatred, resentment, or anger, it only creates harm, actually. Even though you may make some change quickly on the material level, you may think you're making some change, but there's no sustained good change. It will only flip around again eventually. So what else is here in the Sanskrit, the qualities of Parikshit? Dvija Varya Shikshaya. So he had this great power, but he wasn't on some kind of independent ego trip. He took instructions from the Brahmanas. He was not just independently ruling, doing as he liked and being strong and forceful. Everything he did, he consulted the Brahmanas. This shows that, you know, the amazing qualities of a Mahabhagavata. It's so balanced. Suddenly you hear about his strength, and then you hear about his soft heart. And then you hear about how he's ruling, but he's taking the advice from the Brahmanas very humbly. Everything, all the opposites are reconciled within the heart of a pure devotee. For us, they're only opposites. It's either one or the other, right? That's the kind of material consciousness. Either you're very soft and sweet and kind, and then you start to use that in places where it's not helpful. Or you're very aggressive and strong and powerful and you can't soften up when that's necessary. So the material consciousness means duality. You're either on one side or the other. But spiritual consciousness means this duality, it unifies on a higher plane and you have everything. That's why Prabhupada said, you know, all the different varnas. Actually, a devotee, you know, when we talk about Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Prabhupada says that a devotee is none of those. He is beyond all of that. At the same time, a devotee is all of those. He can be all of those. Right? You think of Prabhupada, right? He also had that king, spirit of a king. In fact, a devotee said, Prabhupada, if we take more control of things and government, we will make you the king. He said, no, I will be the guru to the king. I will not be the king. I will be the giving advice like the Brahmana. So Prabhupada, Brahmana. Think of all the varnas. Kshatriya, Vaishya. Prabhupada was also very good at that. You know, he was running the whole movement. So much money was involved and he had the intelligence to take care of that. Shudra. Also, Shudra, don't think it's Shudra is this terrible thing. It's a qualified Shudra means a servant, a loyal servant. honest, hardworking. That's glorious as well. But everything is there in a devotee. When they're actually surrendered to the Lord, when we take that step of truly surrendering to the Lord, then all these divine qualities awaken, develop and awaken. That's also pointed out in this purport, because it says, Parikshit, Mahat Gunastata, that all the good qualities were there, but Prabhupada points out why. Because Mahabhagavata. Because he's a Mahabhagavata, then all the qualities developed. That's the order. I'll just read what he says. The order of it is that when we see the value of surrendering to the Lord, we begin to see and feel the value of that, and we long for that, and we take those steps to just become a true devotee of the Lord, understanding what that means. And then when the heart is surrendered, when the heart actually surrenders in that way, then the qualities begin to manifest. Everybody in the world doesn't have that perspective. They have the perspective of do your best to develop those qualities. But that doesn't get you closer to God, actually. That doesn't get you to the point of Mahabhagavat. Surrender gets you to the point of Mahabhagavat. But not, and it's not that you have some good quality in the world, take the quality tolerance. It's a very good quality. Right? So if you try to develop it on your own, more and more tolerant, it's such a good quality. That doesn't lead to God consciousness, because the starting point is material consciousness, and now you're just trying to perfect a material quality by your own power. You can't do it. So if you notice, when we try to become tolerant just by our own effort, then eventually we explode. You know, it's like we're trying to just squeeze, be tolerant here, this is getting really bad, my kids are doing this, my friend is doing this, my boss is doing this, I'm going to be tolerant. Is that working? Of building up anger. Unless we have some realization and we're able to let it go. But usually it's a kind of build up, and then there has to be a discharge of anger, rage, whatever it may be. Frustration. All the qualities are like that. Humility, love. Try to love. You know, I'm going to try to love. You see, by trying to manifest these qualities, it shows that we don't have it. You know, if you have a quality, you have it. And you don't have to try to manifest it. Like Parikshit had courage. He wasn't thinking, okay, before he went out into the kingdom, he wasn't trying to build up his courage and try to be courageous. He wasn't trying to be courageous. He wasn't trying to be noble. He was noble. He was courageous. It was there. It was a quality of the soul that was awakened from being a Mahabhagavata. That's an interesting point, right? It's like if you're trying to do something, you don't have it quite yet. And your trying doesn't make it happen either. So it's very... What makes it happen is the deep change of heart, the deep surrender of the soul to God. When that is accomplished, then you will have courage. You will have no fear. Right? They asked Prabhupada, what do you experience when you chant? And he said, I experience no fear. Prabhupada, fearless, right? Even his name from birth also. That was somehow known. But the quality of fearlessness, I'm going to try to take away the fear, I'm going to try, it doesn't work. We have to try, right? Of course. I'm in a fallen state, no doubt, so I have to try. But here's the thing, how a devotee tries. This is how a devotee tries, which makes it different from others. We try to develop these things, even though we don't fully have them, because the order is given. Because we are in the world of bhakti, in the world of devotional service, there's a relationship to guru, there's a relationship to parampara, and they're saying, on my order, you try to develop these things. Even if you don't have it, you try. And with that motive and understanding, we're protected. Because our goal is to surrender to Krishna. And we're in ways where we're applying that, we're surrendering to Guru and so forth. So because we're in that whole realm of Krishna consciousness, then we can try to develop the qualities in the right way. We make an effort. Because it's connected, it's linked. Even though we're imperfect, we're linked to perfection. And if we follow the advice given by the pure devotees, by the Mahabhagavata, then we're safe, we're okay, we're gradually coming there. But if you take out the pure devotee, if you take out the Mahabhagavata, and you have an ordinary person in this world who's simply trying to develop good qualities, it's the material platform. It will never develop into a divine quality. The divine quality means eternal, unconditional. And a material quality means either ignorance, passion, goodness, and it will shift around and always be temporary, always be moving, always be changing. So, Parikshit is not trying to be tough or strong or furious or bold or courageous or noble or loving. He is simply manifesting those qualities because he is a surrendered soul. And therefore Prabhupada takes time in the purport to point that out, that even though the qualities were predicted from birth, the real reason why they're there and they've developed is because he's Mahabhagavata. He's a great devotee. So for us, we can perform our devotional service, Krishna consciousness, in this way, that we're trying to develop these things. At the same time, we know without the mercy of the Lord, the true quality will never develop. So there's a certain humility that stays, that should stay with us. Trying to be good. I'm going to try to do what's right here. Because that is required of me, that is asked of me by the parampara. At the same time, I know I cannot do good. I know I'm very weak. Any moment, Maya can just sweep me away. So, if I surrender, right, if I surrender to the Lord, then He can provide me with these divine qualities. Just as He has those divine qualities, He gives those divine qualities to His devotees. So, although we are imperfect because we're linked to perfection, right? It makes, sometimes Prabhupada would say, it's very interesting, he would say when people commented on his disciples, that you can read this in different places, but he would say actually they are all liberated. Okay, how is that? Right? Because even if we're imperfect, but we are carrying out the order of the perfect, in one sense, that those personalities, even though they get lost in their own minds and their own doubts and all that, what's actually happening is they're operating on the liberated platform. Because the pure devotee's activities are perfect, and anyone who comes in connection with those activities, they're also part of that perfection. But our minds don't know that, they don't realize that. So we're still lost in the modes of nature within our own minds. But if you actually, what's happening is you're under the divine shelter of the Lord and you're totally protected. If you could just let go of the doubts of your mind, if you could just not believe your mind and simply stay nicely engaged in the service of the devotee and the Lord, you're actually fully protected. The Lord, when He comes into this world, His pastimes are perfect. But think about that for a moment, because everyone associating with Him is not perfect, but then how are our pastimes perfect? Because He's relating with people. This is His Kriya Shakti. His Shakti of His activities are always perfect. They're never touched by the material energy. And so if you're a person involved in that, by the mercy of the Lord, you're somehow involved with the Lord's activities or the pure devotee's activities, and you're going along and you're following that order and staying connected, you're operating on the liberated platform, but the samvit shakti, the awareness shakti of the Lord, has not yet entered your consciousness. So you're not aware of it. but actually you're totally under the shelter of the divine energy. And so sometimes Prabhupada would say like that, that they actually, so long my disciples are, I'm giving orders, they're very surrendered to those orders, they are doing it. So long they stay like this, actually they are liberated, liberated platform. And somebody asked Prabhupada once, they read somewhere that if to preach the message of the Supreme Personality of God in this world, then one is uttama devotee, one is on the highest level of devotional service. And so they asked Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada, we are preaching, so should it be understood that we are on the highest level, we are uttama? Prabhupada said, I am preaching. And you are also, on my order you are doing. So, but if you deviate from my order, then not. Then you are not on that high level. So in one sense, he said, I'm preaching, I'm the one preaching, but I'm giving so many instructions and you would follow. So you're also preaching, you're also on that high level. But if you go off, then you are not. You are not uttama. So the devotee understands, of course, you see the problem is we fall back into our mind and our imagination. Just like yesterday, we were here in the temple and for Radhastami. And I was sitting in the back and the curtains, you know, beautiful darshan, the Lord is present. And the devotees were chanting kirtan. And it was so blissful and glorious. And I'm thinking, same point, it just crossed my mind that actually under this energy, everything is perfect. It is completely pure and I'm under the shelter, but my mind may take me away from that. But the reality of is that we are fully under that shelter. So if we can let go sometimes of what, start to doubt the mind, what the mind is thinking, oh, I have no chance, I have no hope. I'm feeling guilt, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. This is falling back into the imagination of the mind and it's actually outside of the reality of what's happening. So, thinking, this is the problem, we're thinking so much, thinking. But Prabhupada, you see, Prabhupada wasn't so much like thinking, how should I do it, try to do it, think more. He would just see and act. See what is to be done and act. You know? Imagine living in that way. We're not lost in all the doubts and the mind and the confusion, but you're just seeing what is to be done. The Lord from within gives guidance, you see it and you act on it. And then again, service, you're looking for service. But the mind is so busy and entangled in this material web of the modes of nature. And we're shifting so much. So it's not an easy thing to let go of that, of course, but we should at least see what's happening. That it's so long we're nicely connected, like we're sitting in the temple now, we're hearing Bhagavatam. Prabhupada is here, devotees are here, striving for pure devotional service. We're under the divine shelter, everything is actually perfect. But the mind will not allow, the awareness of it is not there. This is the Samvit Shakti of the Lord, the Lord's awareness potency, conscious potency. So that's not there, but actually my body, if it's engaged in serving, my body is there on the high level. If the guru says do this and you go and do it with your body, you're there on a level of kriya, of activity, but you're not there on a level of awareness. But so if you, therefore, don't believe your mind and just go on nicely serving. Because as soon as you start to believe your thoughts, all these other thoughts, then we start to feel those thoughts, and then we get controlled by those thoughts, and then there's this other voice. This is the material consciousness, also keeping us away from Krishna, from Krishna consciousness, and we give in to it. We give in to the mind. It's not that we are the mind. The mind suggests something because of the modes of nature. The mind makes a suggestion. And you say, yes. But you say it so quickly and swiftly that you don't realize it's not you. You know, the mind will destroy you. The mind will tell you you're a fool, you're an idiot, you know, this has happened, you'll never do it. This is the modes actually acting within us And then but we're surrendered to that. So we say, yes, you're right. I identify with you. I identify with you. But what if we could start to see the lie in that? And start to see, oh, there's that voice. You know what? I don't believe it. It pulls me in sometimes, and I can't just pretend I'm beyond it. So I get pulled in. But let me keep reminding myself, it's not me. That's not a voice from the soul. That is a voice that wants to keep you away from the soul. But we hear other voices too. We have the voice of Shastra, we have the voice of Guru, we have the voice of Krishna. And we think, okay, Krishna's saying this, Guru said, let me just go align myself with that. And actually, when you do that, you are like, you know, I always think Prabhupada was performing pastimes. So all the associates of Prabhupada were also performing pastimes. But they take it as karma because we fall back into our minds and our imagination, and therefore it produces karma. But if you can let go of that and actually just be connected and serving, you are also in the pastime. Prabhupada said this, you know, movement coming from India finally into the Western world, this is an extension of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And they're still there. They're still happening. If Prabhupada is there, they're there. Right? We hear all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, so beautiful, so wonderful. We can't imagine that, you know, well, Prabhupada, we can imagine him being in that same pastime coming to the West, but we can't imagine myself in that pastime. We think, no, but I am the most fallen. You know, I have no connection. I'm a demon, Prabhupada. But actually, if we're nicely, just sincerely trying to connect to the order of Prabhupada, you're pulled into the Kriya Shakti of the Lord, which is always perfect and complete. But we fall out with our minds. Where is Maya? Where is Kali? It's not so much out there. The real residence of Maya is in the mind. So, and you see thoughts get us and take us and control us, and we go with it. So anyway, this is important because, again, we hear this King Parikshit. He's in that state. And if the citizens nicely follow, they're under the shelter of the Lord. If they deviate, become independent, do their own thing, they're out of the shelter, out of the kingdom of Parikshit, and they're in the kingdom of Kali. The kingdom of Maya is also there. So which kingdom do we want to come over? That's the free will of the living entity. Which kingdom do I want to be a citizen of? Maya's kingdom or Parikshit or the Mahabhagavat or Krishna's kingdom? That's the first real choice we make. That's the first real choice we make. Because we're making so many choices throughout the day, but it's usually a choice between the modes of nature, and actually the modes, again, are dictating, and then we're following. It's not even a choice. But when the soul begins to awaken, and we see, oh, this is the choice. Surrender to Krishna, surrender to Maya. Because so long ago I surrendered to Maya, I'm entangled. But now let me start to let go of that. And understand what this truly means, to surrender to Krishna. Okay. So, we'll stop here. But this is a great chapter to hear about Parikshit's qualities and how he ruled and how strong he was when he confronts the personification of Kali Yuga. How strong, how powerful. This is his compassion. To understand what true compassion is. It has a softness and it also has a great strength. And that quality will awaken. Without trying for it, it will awaken when we surrender to the Lord. And we can also live and act in this world in that way. With true compassion. So powerful. Thank you all so much. So, have a few minutes. Anyone have any thoughts, comments, or questions? Yes, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Very nice class. Thank you. You spoke about, just where you ended with, the soft compassion and powerful compassion. So how, can you tell us how to apply that powerful compassion, especially to our children.
Yeah.
Without
yes, it's a difficult. It's at least first to realize how difficult it is to apply, and that I may not apply it perfectly. First to realize, you know, our get to know ourselves, and see how, you know, I may think I'm compassionate, but actually I lack compassion. Right. So the first thing is to kind of get to know and see how we're in this state. Because that helps us to really be centered in reality, to be reminded of it. So, again, we have to, you know, my point was not to try, so we have to do our best. We have to, again, just like King Pariksit here, he takes consultation from others. You know, we have to examine our motives for being too strong. You know, when you start to find yourself out, find out your own mind and what it's doing. Okay, I'm going to be, you know, very heavy in the name of compassion. But then you see, when we feel this anger and this ego and so forth, we can see that, we reflect and see, this is my, there is some self-motive in all this, and therefore it's coming out in this way. So you stay very aware that all of this is going on, first of all. And there's other things, you know, it's a great question, because I heard from one person, and I found it helpful for myself. I'll just mention one thing, and I could speak about it more at some other point to give more information about this, but I found it helpful with myself, is that we've all been harmed, even if we've had good parents, you know, good parents. We've also been harmed in various ways, and we hold resentment towards our parents. So, this is a powerful practice, but going to our parents and forgiving them for the resentment, not for what they did, because they might have done something wrong. You're not going to forgive them and say, oh, I forgive you for what you did to me. We might have been abused. But we have no right to hold resentment and anger. And you can go to your parents and say, or if your parents are no longer there, you can still accomplish this within your heart with a certain realization. But that I've been resenting you, and I'm sorry for that. I forgive you for what, or whatever you've done. I've been resenting you, and I want to let go of that now. So I mention that because if that's done in a powerful way, it really clears the heart so that now you can take care of your children in the right way, because you're not whole. We pass on resentment. You ever notice how, like, it's amazing. I have one friend whose father had 5 divorces, and the son also had exactly 5 divorces. And sometimes, you know, what's passed on from parents to child, it's like these things, even if you don't want to pass it on, something gets through. And if we're holding resentment and anger towards our parents, and we want our children to be beyond that, or obedient, to be led in the right way, so there's something about taking responsibility, and rather thinking, how am I going to do this with my kids? Let me do something. Let me take responsibility and clear my heart, and then I'll be able to actually parent in a deeper way, in a more profound way, because I let go of resentment, and now that's going to come, that could be passed on. So anyway, this is just some thoughts. I've given a lot of thought to this, and I did it myself. I went to both my parents and forgave them for not for what they did so much. It's not like, you know, my mother, for example, spoiled me, so we call that love in this world, but actually it could be harmful, right? It could be a little harmful to be spoiled, just like it's harmful for the opposite, to be just like controlled. So, you know, I realized that actually I went to my mother and I told her that this actually harmed me. I know you tried your best. I'm grateful for everything you've done, but I also feel this lack in my life because of that, a lack of strength. And so I realized all these years I've been resenting you for that. I didn't know it when I was young, but I have been resenting you. But I want to let go of that now. I'm sorry. I forgive you. I forgive you. So we forgive. And in that way, something powerful happens. This is very connected to Krishna consciousness, because the relationship to the parents, letting go of resentment, it begins to open us for a connection that maybe is blocked because of various things like this. So give it a little thought, reflect on that a little bit, because it's not just reflect on how this might be done. It's a very different approach. We just want to think like, okay, I have these kids, there's me, there's the kids, how do I do a good job? Let me try this, let me learn this method, let me do it this way. But this has more power, because you're letting go of resentment from your own heart, and that will be passed, that can be passed to your child. That, imagine that example for a child. The example of a person who's taken ownership, let go of anger from their heart, and is trying to serve as a devotee, that will go into the child. So, yeah.
And you want them to become good devotees, so compassion in that, you know, strong compassion in that sense.
Yeah, give that. So we give that. We give what we've been given, you know. We know what to give. You know, we wanna share this with them, not force it, but we wanna share things and we wanna be an example. You know, we wanna be if they see an example in the home of someone who's doing this and, you know, nicely chanting and hearing and trying to do what's right and live with integrity as a devotee, when a child sees that, that is preaching, that is giving compassion. If you just want to use words, but our hearts are also in, you know, not in a good place in the words, or we try to force something, do this, chant your arms, do this, it's not so good for children, because a deeper thing gets communicated to children, not just kind of push or certain words and so forth. So we want to introduce, we want to share what we have and give that, and we also want to be an example, and we want to do things to change our own heart, because that's what goes to the child in a deeper way. And so those are just some thoughts. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. It's already 9 o'clock. There were actually many things you said that I had comments on. I guess I'll just pick one. The concept that the mind is telling us, oh, you're so fallen, you'll never amount to anything, is it not also possible that sometimes the mind might tell some people, you're the greatest, you're the best, you don't need to work on yourself, you're part of Prabhupada's pastimes, mm-hmm. and that we have to be also alert to understand another point you made about if we're trying, that's not enough. And it reminded me of the Damodar Leela, where the 2 inches, one is our effort, mm. and the other is Krishna's mercy.
Right.
So, yeah, now I'm thinking. Also, Maharaj Pariksit was ready to kill the personality of Kali, but it's because Kali took shelter of him, just like Lord Ram. Mm. Because Kali took shelter, then he had to find him a place.
Yeah.
So, those all sort of go together in a way.
Nice, great points. And I like especially this, see, if you start thinking, I'm under the pastime of Krishna, everything is good, everything is great, that's also getting into the mind, actually. It's the other side of it. So you want to let go of that too. And simply act and serve and stay nicely connected. So you don't start to then puff yourself up. I mean, some people think they're great, some people think they're nothing. Those are 2 sides of the same coin. On the material level, there's also a spiritual way of being very humble and feeling like nothing, but that's a very different quality, because it's not paralyzing. It's also, it doesn't prevent you from advancing, it actually helps you. Anyway, but thank you for your comments. Hare Krishna. Sorry for going over time. Anything else, Prabhu? Okay?
There's so many things, but 6.5 Bhagavad Gita says,
yeah.
That without mind, you cannot be liberated. You cannot even get out.
Without?
6.5 Bhagavad Gita, Udharat Atma Atmanoyam, Atma Avasarayat, Atma Iva Atmana Vandhu, Atma Iva Ripur Atmana. Mind become friend, mind become enemy. But without mind, you cannot get yourself out of the material world.
Right.
So mind not necessarily bad or good in one sense. Mind is a media.
Yes.
You have to see through mind. Even to do bhakti, even to talk to you right now, I'm using mind.
Yeah.
Mind is a vehicle we are sitting on. Yeah, tool.
It's a tool.
Correct.
And so long we're in a material consciousness, that's the problem. You know, the material consciousness. It's material mind, but there's also spiritual mind. There's also in between material and spiritual mind, no?
You can say what Radhanand Maharaj's lecture was, I understood that. When you follow the spiritual instruction, the intelligent guru gives or Bhagavad Gita gives, and you apply that, that time mind is under the intelligent, that is spiritual mind. Right. Right. Practically, we can do that.
Right.
And if we don't have spiritual purpose behind my life, then it is material, period.
Yeah.
As simple as this.
Mm-hmm.
Another point actually somebody could ask you, because Prabhupada says about the nine symptoms that when the bhava arises in the heart, it's in Nectar Devotion, 16th, 17th chapter.
Yeah.
Prabhupada, in one lecture he said, not in the Nectar Devotion, but in any lecture he says, even though bhava is eternally within the heart of each soul, but you have to check whether you are developing those. Now, is it there or is going to I'm going to develop it? Both. If you look at both ways.
Mm.
Because you made one nice point that if something is not there, you cannot get it out. In one sense, yes, it is true.
Mm.
But bhava is already in every heart, every soul has in their heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kuvanai Savanadi Siddha Siddha Karayudai. But Prabhupada also said you should check 5 years back, I was there. 5 years now, where am I? Am I developing these qualities?
Yeah.
So it is both.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the purpose of doing sadhana?
Yeah. Going, yeah, we want to check, we want to look back and actually be able to see there's been a change. That we have to check ourselves.
Yeah. Mm. But it is there in the sadhana.
Yeah.
So one example we can use, like a wood has a fire, but outside fire has to ignite in order to see inner fire actually there.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Good
example of that. Nice. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.